Chapter 11. It was not until 3 days afterwards that the Epanchins were quite gracious again. Though Mushkin, as usual, took a great deal of blame on himself and genuinely expected to be punished, yet he had at first the fullest inward conviction that Lizaveta Prokofievna could not be seriously angry with him, and was really more angry with herself. And so such a long period of animosity reduced him by the third day to the most gloomy bewilderment. Other circumstances contributed to this, and one especially so. To Mushkin's sensitiveness, it went on gaining in significance during those 3 days, and of late he had blamed himself for two extremes, for his excessive, senseless, and impertinent readiness to trust people, and at the same time for his gloomy suspiciousness. In short, by the end of the third day, the incident of the eccentric lady who had accosted Yevgeny Pavlovich had taken in his imagination alarming and mysterious proportions. The essence of the riddle, apart from other aspects of the affair, lay for Mushkin in the mortifying question, was he to blame for this new monstrosity, or was it... But he did not say who else. As for the letters NFB, he saw in that nothing but an innocent piece of mischief, the most childish mischief, indeed, so that it would have been a shame, and even in one way almost dishonourable, to think much about it. However, on the day after the scandalous evening for the disgraceful incidents of which he was the chief cause, Mushkin had the pleasure of a morning visit from Prince S. and Adelaida. They had come principally to inquire after his health. They were out for a walk together. Adelaida had just noticed in the park a tree, a wonderful spreading old tree with long twisted branches, with a big crack and hollow in it, and covered with young green leaves. She positively must paint it, so that they scarcely spoke of anything else for the whole half hour of their visit. Prince S. was, as usual, cordial and amiable. He questioned Mushkin about the past, and referred to the circumstances of their first acquaintance, so that hardly anything was said of the events of yesterday. At last Adelaida could not keep it up, and admitted with a smile that they had come incognito. But her confession ended there, though from that word incognito it might be judged that he was in special disfavour with her parents, or rather with her mother. But neither Adelaida nor Prince S. uttered one word about her or Aglaya, or even General Epanchin, during their visit. When they went away to continue their walk, they did not ask Mushkin to accompany them. There was no hint of an invitation to the house, either. One very suggestive phrase escaped Adelaida, indeed. Telling him about a watercolour she had been painting, she suddenly expressed a great desire to show it to him.
"How can that be done soon? Stay. I'll either send it to you today by Collier, if he comes, or I'll bring it to you myself tomorrow, when I am out for a walk with the prince," she concluded at last, glad that she had succeeded in getting out of the difficulty so cleverly and comfortably for everyone. At last, as he was about to take leave, Prince S. seemed suddenly to recollect.
"Ah, yes," he asked. "Do you perhaps, dear Lyof Nikolaevich, know who that person was who shouted yesterday from the carriage?"
"It was Nastasia Philipovna," said Mushkin. "Haven't you found out yet that it was she?"
"But I don't know who was with her." "I know. I've heard," Princess caught him up. "But what did that shout mean? It is, I must own, a mystery to me. To me and to others."
Prince S. spoke with extreme and evident perplexity.
"She spoke of some bills of Yevgeny Pavlovich's," Mushkin answered very simply, "which by her request had come from some moneylender into Rogozhin's hand, and that Rogozhin will wait his convenience."
I heard it, my dear prince. But you know that couldn't be so. Yevgeny Pavlovich cannot possibly have given any such bills with a fortune like his. He has, it is true, been careless in the past, and indeed I have helped him out. But with his fortune, to give IOUs to a moneylender and be worried about them is impossible. And he cannot be on such familiar and friendly terms with Nastasia Philipovna. That's what is most mysterious. He swears he knows nothing about it, and I trust him entirely. But the fact is, dear prince, I want to ask you if you know anything. I mean, Has no rumour by some marvel reached you?
No, I know nothing about it.
And I assure you I had nothing to do with it. Ugh, how strange you are, Prince. I really don't know you today. As though I could suppose you had anything to do with an affair of that kind. But you're out of sorts today.
He embraced and kissed him. Had anything to do with an affair of what kind? I don't see that it is an affair of that kind.
There is no doubt that person wished to damage Yevgeny Pavlovich in some way by attributing to him, in the eyes of those present, qualities which he has not and cannot have, Prince S. answered rather dryly. Mushkin was confused, yet he continued to gaze steadily and inquiringly at Prince S., but the latter did not speak.
And weren't there simply bills? Wasn't it literally as she said yesterday?
Mushkin muttered at last in a sort of impatience. But I tell you, judge for yourself. What can there be in common between Yevgeny Pavlovich and her, and above all with Rogozhin? I repeat, he has an immense fortune, and I know it for a fact, and he expects another fortune from his uncle. It's simply that Nastasia Philipovna... Prince S. suddenly paused again, obviously because he did not care to go on speaking of Nastasia Philipovna to Mushkin.
"Then he knows her anyway?"
Mushkin asked suddenly after a minute's silence. "That was so, I believe. Why, he's a giddy fellow. But if it was so, it was long ago in the past. That is, 2 or 3 years back. You see, he used to know Totski. Now there could be nothing of the sort. They could never have been on intimate terms. And you know yourself that she hasn't been here either. She hasn't been anywhere. Many people don't know yet that she has turned up again. I've noticed the carriage for the last 3 days, not more.
A splendid carriage, said Adelaida.
Yes, the carriage was splendid. They took leave, however, on the most friendly, one might say the most brotherly, terms with Prince Lyov Nikolaevich. But there was something of vital importance to our hero in this visit. He had indeed suspected a good deal himself, ever since the previous evening, possibly even earlier, but till their visit he had not brought himself to justify his apprehensions completely. But now it had become clear. Prince S., of course, put a mistaken interpretation on the incident, but still he was not far from the truth. He realized, anyway, that there was an intrigue in it.
Perhaps, though, he understands it quite correctly, thought Mushkin, but only does not want to speak out, and so puts a false interpretation on it on purpose.
What was clearer than anything was that they had come to see him just now, Prince S. certainly had, in the hope of getting some sort of explanation. If that was so, then they plainly looked on him as being concerned in the intrigue. Besides, if this was so, and really were of consequence, then she must have some dreadful object. What object?
Horrible. And how's one to stop her? There is no possibility of stopping her when she is determined on her object.
That Mushkin knew by experience.
She's mad. She's mad.
But that morning was crowded with far too many other unexplained incidents, all coming at once and all requiring to be settled at once, so that Mushkin was very sad. His attention was distracted a little by Vera Lebedev, who came to see him with Lobotchka, and, laughing, told him a long story. She was followed by her open-mouthed sister. They were followed by the schoolboy, Lebedev's son, who informed him that the star that is called Wormwood, in the Apocalypse, that fell upon the fountains of waters, was, by his father's interpretation, the network of railways spread over Europe. Mushkin did not believe that Lebedev did interpret it in this way, and resolved to ask him about it at the first convenient opportunity. From Vera Lebedev, Mushkin learned that Keller had taken up his quarters with them the previous day, and showed every sign of not leaving them for a long time, since he found company in their house, and had made friends with General Ivolgin. He declared, however, he was remaining with them solely to complete his education. On the whole, Mushkin began to like Lebedev's children more and more every day. Kolya had not been there all day. He had set off to Petersburg early in the morning. Lebedev, too, had gone away as soon as it was light to see after some little business of his own. But Mushkin impatiently expected a visit from Gavril Ardilionovich, who was to come to see him without fail that day.
He came just after dinner, about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. At the first glance at him, the thought struck Mushkin that that gentleman at least must know every detail of the affair thoroughly. How could he fail to, indeed, with people like Varvara Ardalionovna and her husband to help him? But Mushkin's relations with Ganya were somewhat peculiar. Mushkin had, for instance, entrusted him with the management of Berdovsky's affair, and particularly asked him to look after it. But in spite of the confidence he put in him over this, and in spite of something that had happened before, certain points always remained between them, about which it was, as it were, mutually agreed not to speak. Mushkin fancied sometimes that Ganya would perhaps, for his part, have liked the fullest and most friendly candour. Now, for instance, Mushkin felt, as soon as Ganya entered, that he was fully persuaded that that moment was the time to break down the ice between them at all points. Gavril Ardalionovitch was in haste, however. His sister was awaiting him with the Lebedevs, and they were both in a hurry over something they were doing. But if Ganya really was expecting a whole series of impatient questions, impulsive confidences, friendly outpourings, he was certainly much mistaken. During the 20 minutes his visit lasted, Mushkin was positively dreamy, almost absent-minded. There was no possibility of the expected questions, or rather of the one principal question Ganya was expecting. Then Ganya, too, decided to speak with great reserve. He talked away for the whole 20 minutes without stopping, laughed, kept up a very light, charming, and rapid chatter, but did not touch on the chief point. Ganya told him, among other things, that Nastasia Philipovna had only been 4 days here in Pavlovsk, and was already attracting general attention. She was staying at Darya Alexeyevna's, in a clumsy-looking little house in Matrosky Street, but her carriage was almost the finest in Pavlovsk. A perfect crowd of followers, old and young, had gathered about her already. Her carriage was sometimes escorted by gentlemen on horseback. Nastasia Philipovna was, as she always had been, very capricious in her choice of friends, and only received those she fancied. And yet a perfect regiment was forming round her. She had plenty of champions, if she needed them. One gentleman, staying in a summer villa, had already on her account quarrelled with the young lady to whom he was formerly betrothed, and one old general had all but cursed his son because of her. She often took out driving with her a charming little girl, a distant relative of Darya Alexeyevna's, who was only just 16. This girl sang very well, so their little house attracted general attention in the evenings. Nastasia Philipovna, however, behaved with extreme propriety, dressed quietly but with extraordinarily good taste, and all the ladies were envying her taste, her beauty, and her carriage. "The eccentric incident yesterday," Ganya ventured, "was, of course, premeditated, and, of course, must not be counted. To find any fault with her, people will have to seek it out on purpose, or to invent it, which they would not be slow to do, however." Ganya concluded, expecting Mushkin would be sure to ask him at that point why he called yesterday's incident premeditated, and why they would not be slow to do so. But Mushkin did not ask it. Ganya talked freely about Yevgeny Pavlovich without being questioned, which was very strange, for he brought him into the conversation without any pretext for doing so. In Gavril Ardalionovitch's opinion, Yevgeny Pavlovich had not known Nastasia Philipovna. He scarcely knew her even now, for he had only been introduced to her 4 days ago when out walking, and had probably not been once at her house. As for the IOUs, it might be so too. Ganya knew that for a positive fact. Yevgeny Pavlovich's fortune was, of course, a large one, but some business connected with his estate really was rather in a muddle. At this interesting point, Ganya suddenly broke off. He said nothing about Nastasia Philipovna's prank of the previous evening, except the passing reference above. At last, Varvara Ardalionovna came in to look for Ganya. She stayed a minute, announced, also without being asked, that Yevgeny Pavlovich was in Petersburg today, and would perhaps be there tomorrow too, that her husband, Ivan Petrovich Titsin, was also in Petersburg, and also probably on Yevgeny Pavlovich's business, that something had really happened there. As she was going, she added that Lizaveta Prokofievna was in a fiendish temper today. But what was most odd, Aglaya had quarrelled with her whole family, not only her father and mother, but even with her two sisters, and that was anything but a good sign. After giving him, as it were in passing, this last piece of news, which was of extreme importance to Mushkin, the brother and sister departed. Ganya had, possibly from false modesty, possibly to spare the prince's feelings, not uttered one word about the case of Pavlishchov's son. Mushkin thanked him, however, once more for the careful way he had managed the affair. Mushkin was very glad to be left alone at last. He walked off the veranda, crossed the road and went into the park. He longed to think over and decide upon one step. Yet that step was not one of those that can be thought over, but one of those which are simply decided upon without deliberation. A terrible longing came upon him to leave everything here and go back to the place from which he had come, to go away into the distance to some remote region, to go away at once without even saying goodbye to anyone. He had a foreboding that if he remained here, even a few days longer, he would be drawn into this world irrevocably, and that his life would be bound up with it forever. But he did not consider it for 10 minutes. He decided at once that it would be impossible to run away, that it would be almost cowardice, that he was faced with such difficulties that it was his duty now to solve them, or at least to do his utmost to solve them. Absorbed in such thoughts, he returned home after a walk of less than a quarter of an hour. He was utterly unhappy at that moment. Lebedev was still away from home, so that towards evening Keller succeeded in bursting in on Mushkin, brimming over with confidences and confessions, though he was not drunk. He openly declared that he had come to tell Mushkin the whole story of his life, and that it was to do so that he had remained in Pavlovsk. There was not the faintest possibility of getting rid of him. Nothing would have induced him to go. Keller had come prepared to talk at great length and with great incoherence. But suddenly, almost at the first word, he skipped to the conclusion and announced that he had so completely lost every trace of morality, solely through lack of faith in the Almighty, that he had positively become a thief.
"Can you fancy that?"
"Listen, Keller. If I were in your place, I would confess that without special need," Mushkin began. "But perhaps you make things up against yourself on purpose."
To you alone, and solely to promote my own development, to no one else. I shall die and bear my secret to the coffin. But, Prince, if you knew, if only you knew how hard it is to get money nowadays. How is one to get it, allow me to ask you? The answer is always the same. Bring gold or diamonds and we'll give you something for them. That's just what I haven't got. Can you fancy that? I lost my temper at last after waiting and waiting. "Will you give me something for emeralds?" said I. "Yes, for emeralds too," said he. "Well, that's all right," said I, and I put on my hat and walked out. "You're a set of scoundrels, damn you. Yes, by Jove."
"Had you any emeralds then?"
"A likely story. Oh, Prince, what a sweet and innocent, pastoral, one may say, idea of life you have."
Mushkin began at last to feel not exactly sorry for him, but, as it were, vaguely ill at ease on his account. It occurred to him to wonder, indeed, whether anything could be made of the man by any good influence. His own influence, he considered for various reasons, quite unsuitable. And this was not due to self-depreciation, but to a peculiar way of looking at things. By degrees they got into talk, so much so that they did not want to part. Keller, with extraordinary readiness, confessed to actions of which it seemed inconceivable anyone could be willing to speak. At every fresh story he asserted positively that he was penitent and full of tears. Yet he told it as though he were proud of his action, and sometimes, too, so absurdly that he and Mushkin laughed at last like madmen.
"The great thing is that you have a sort of childlike trustfulness and extraordinary truthfulness," said Mushkin at last. "Do you know that by that alone you make up for a very great deal?"
"Generous. Chivalrously generous," Keller assented, much touched. "But you know, Prince, it is all in dreams, and so to say in bravado. It never comes to anything in action. And why is it? I can't understand.
Don't despair. Now, one can say positively that you have given me a full account of everything. I fancy, anyway, that it's impossible to add anything more to what you've told me, isn't it?
Impossible? Keller exclaimed, almost compassionately. Oh, Prince, how completely a la Swiss, if I may say so, you still interpret human nature.
Can you really have more to add? Mushkin brought out, with timid wonder. Then tell me, please. What did you expect of me, Keller? And why have you come to me with your confession?
From you? What did I expect? In the first place, it is pleasant to watch your simplicity. It's nice to sit and talk to you. I know there is a really virtuous person before me anyway. And secondly,
he was confused. Perhaps you wanted to borrow money? Mushkin prompted very gravely and simply, and even rather shyly. Keller positively started. He glanced quickly, with the same wonder, straight into Mushkin's face, and brought his fist down violently on the table.
"Well, that's how you knock a fellow out completely. Upon my word, Prince, such simplicity, such innocence as was never seen in the Golden Age. Yet all at once you pierce right through a fellow like an arrow with such psychological depth of observation. But allow me, Prince, this requires explanation, for I'm simply bowled over." Of course, in the long run, my object was to borrow money, but you asked me about it as if you saw nothing reprehensible in that, as though it were just as it should be.
Yes, from you it is just as it should be.
And you're not indignant?
No, why?
Listen, Prince, I've been staying here since yesterday evening. First, from a special respect for the French Archbishop Bourdaloue. We were pulling corks in Lebediev's room till 3 in the morning. And secondly and chiefly, and here I'll take my oath I'm speaking the holy truth, I stayed because I wanted, by making you a full heartfelt confession, so to speak, to promote my own development. With that idea I fell asleep, bathed in tears, towards 4 o'clock. Would you believe, on the word of a man of honour, now at the very minute I fell asleep, genuinely filled with inward and, so to say, outward tears, for I really was sobbing, I remember, a hellish thought occurred to me. Why not, when all said and done, borrow money of him after my confession? So that I prepared my confession, so to say, as though it were a sort of fricassee, with tears for sauce, to pave the way with those tears, so that you might be softened and fork out 150 rubles. Don't you think that was base?
But most likely that's not true. It's simply both things came at once. The two thoughts came together. That often happens. It's constantly so with me. I think it's not a good thing, though. And do you know, Keller, I reproached myself most of all for it. You might have been telling me about myself just now. I have sometimes even fancied, Mushkin went on very earnestly, genuinely and profoundly interested, that all people are like that, so that I was even beginning to excuse myself, because it is awfully difficult to struggle against these double thoughts. I've tried. God knows how they arise and come into one's mind. But you call it simply baseness. Now I'm beginning to be afraid of those thoughts again. Anyway, I am not your judge. Yet to my mind, one can't call it simply baseness. What do you think? You were acting deceitfully to obtain my money by your tears. But you swear yourself that there was another motive too for your confession, an honourable motive as well as a mercenary one. As for the money, you want it for riotous living, don't you? And after such a confession, that's feebleness, of course. But yet how are you going to give up riotous living all in a minute? That's impossible, I know. What's to be done? It had better be left to your own conscience, don't you think?
Mushkin looked with great interest at Keller. The problem of double ideas had evidently occupied his mind for some time.
"Well, I don't understand why they call you an idiot after that," cried Keller.
Mushkin flushed a little.
"Even the preacher, Bourdaloue, would not have spared a man, but you've spared one and judged me humanely. And to punish myself and to show that I am touched, I won't take 150 rubles. Give me only 25 and it will be enough. That's all I want, for a fortnight at any rate. I won't come for money within a fortnight. I did mean to treat Agashka, but she's not worth it. Oh, God bless you, dear Prince."
Lebediev came in at last, immediately on his return from town. Noticing the 25-ruble note in Keller's hand, he frowned. but the latter was in a hurry to get away as soon as he was provided with funds, and promptly took his departure. Lebediev at once began to speak ill of him.
"You are unjust. He really was genuinely penitent," Mushkin observed at last.
"What does his penitence amount to? It's just like me saying, 'I am abject,' yesterday. You know it's only words."
"So that was only words? I thought you..."
"Well, to you, only to you, I will tell the truth, because you see through a man. Words and deeds and lies and truth are all mixed up in me and are perfectly sincere. Deeds and truth come out in my genuine penitence. I swear it, whether you believe it or not. And words and lies in the hellish and always present craving to get the better of a man, to make something even out of one's tears of penitence. It is so, by God. I wouldn't tell another man. He'd laugh or curse. But you, Prince, judge humanely."
"Why, that's exactly what he told me just now," cried Mushkin. "And you both seem to be proud of it. You positively surprise me. Only he's more sincere than you are, and you've turned it into a regular trade. Come, that's enough. Don't crease up your face, Lebediev, and don't lay your hands on your heart. Haven't you something to say to me? You don't come in for nothing." Lebediev grimaced and wriggled. "I've been waiting for you all day to put a question to you. Tell me the truth straight off for once in your life. Had you anything to do with that carriage stopping here yesterday or not?" Lebediev grimaced again, began tittering, rubbing his hands, even sneezing at last, but still he could not bring himself to speak. "I see you had."
"But indirectly, only indirectly. It's the holy truth, I'm telling you. The only part I had in it was letting a certain personage know in good time that I had such a company in my house and that certain persons were present."
"I knew you sent your son there. He told me so himself just now. But what intrigue is this?" Mushkin cried impatiently.
"It's not my intrigue, not mine," Lebediev protested, gesticulating. "There are others in it, and it is rather a fantasy, so to speak, than an intrigue.
But what's the meaning of it? For heaven's sake, do explain. Is it possible you don't understand that it concerns me directly? You see, it is blackening Yevgeny Pavlovich's character."
"Prince, most illustrious prince," Lebediev began wriggling again. "You won't allow me to tell the whole truth, you know. I've tried to already more than once. You wouldn't allow me to go on."
Mushkin paused and thought a little. "Very well. Tell the truth," he said dejectedly, evidently after a severe struggle.
"Aglaya Ivanovna," Lebediev promptly began.
"Be silent! Be silent!" Mushkin cried furiously, flushing all over with indignation and perhaps with shame, too. "It's impossible. It's all nonsense. You invented all that yourself, or some madman like you. And let me never hear of it from you again."
Late in the evening, after 10 o'clock, Kolya arrived with a whole budget of news. His news was of two kinds, of Petersburg and of Pavlovsk. He hastily related the chief items of the Petersburg news, mainly about Ippolit and the scene of the previous day, and passed quickly to the Pavlovsk tidings, meaning to return to the former subject again later. He had returned from Petersburg 3 hours before, and had gone straight to the Epanchins before coming to Mushkin.
"It's awful, the to-do there."
Of course, the carriage incident was in the foreground, but no doubt something else had happened, something he and Mushkin knew nothing about.
"I didn't spy, of course, and didn't care to question anyone. They received me well, however, better than I'd expected, indeed. But of you, not a word, Prince."
The most important and interesting fact was that Aglaya had been quarrelling with her people about Ganya. He did not know the details of the quarrel, but only that it was over Ganya. Fancy that. And it had been a terrible quarrel, so it must be something important. The general had come in late, had come in frowning, had come in with Yevgeny Pavlovich, who met with an excellent reception, and had been wonderfully gay and charming. The most striking piece of news was that Lizaveta Prokofievna had, without any fuss, sent for Varvara Ardalionovna, who was sitting with the young ladies, and had once for all turned her out of the house, in a very polite manner, however. I heard it from Varya herself. But when Varya came out of Madame Epanchin's room and said goodbye to the young ladies, they did not know she had been forbidden the house forever, and that she was taking leave of them for the last time.
"'But Varvara Ardalionovna was here at 7 o'clock,' said Mushkin, astonished.
"'Well, she was turned out at 8 o'clock, or just before. "'I'm very sorry for Varya. "'I'm sorry for Ganya. "'No doubt they have always got some intrigues in hand. "'They can't get on without it. "'I never could make out what they were hatching, "'and I don't want to know. "'But I assure you, my dear kind prince, "'that Ganya has a heart. "'He's a lost soul in many respects, no doubt.' "'But he has points on other sides worth finding out, "'and I shall never forgive myself for not having understood him before. "'I don't know whether to go on now, after the fuss with Varya. "'It's true I introduced myself from the very first, quite independently and separately, "'but all the same I must think it over.
"'You need not be too sorry for your brother,' Mushkin observed. "'If it has come to that, Gavriil Ardalionovitch must be dangerous in Madame Apanshin's eyes.' "'And that means that certain hopes of his have been encouraged.
"'How? What hopes?'
Kolya said in amazement.
"'Surely you don't think that Aglaya... that's impossible!'
"'Mushkin did not speak. "'You're an awful sceptic, Prince,' Kolya added 2 minutes later. "'I've noticed that for some time past you've become a great sceptic. "'You're beginning to believe in nothing, and are always imagining things.' "'Did I use the word sceptic correctly in this case?'
"'I believe you did, though I really don't know for certain myself.
"'But I give up the word sceptic myself. "'I've found another explanation,'
Kolya cried suddenly.
"'You're not a sceptic, but you're jealous. "'You're fiendishly jealous of Ganya over a certain proud young lady.'
"'Seeing this, Kolya jumped up and began laughing, "'as perhaps he had never laughed before. "'Seeing that Mushkin blushed all over, Kolya laughed more than ever.' He was highly delighted with the idea that Mushkin was jealous over Aglaya, but he ceased at once on observing that the prince was really wounded. After that, they talked earnestly and anxiously for another hour, or hour and a half. Next day, Mushkin had to spend the whole morning in Petersburg on urgent business. It was past 4 o'clock in the afternoon when, on the way back to Pavlovsk, he met General Apanshin at the railway station. The latter seized him hurriedly by the arm, looked about him as though in alarm, and drew Mushkin after him into a first-class compartment, that they might travel together. He was burning with impatience to discuss something important.
"'To begin with, dear Prince, don't be angry with me. If there's been anything on my side, forget it. I should have come to see you myself yesterday, but I didn't know how Lizaveta Prokofievna would take it. Oh, it's simply hell in my home. An inscrutable sphinx is settled there.' "'And I wander about and can't make head or tail of it. "'As for you, to my thinking, you're less to blame than any of us, "'though, of course, a great deal has happened through you. "'You see, Prince, it's nice to be a philanthropist, but not too much so. "'You've tasted the fruits of it already, maybe. "'I like kind-heartedness, of course, and respect Lizaveta Prokofievna, but...
The general continued for a long time in this style, but his words were astonishingly incoherent. It was evident that he was extremely upset and puzzled by something utterly beyond his comprehension.
"'I have no doubt that you had nothing to do with it,' he spoke out at last more clearly. "'But I beg you as a friend not to visit us for some time, till the winds changed. "'As for Yevgeny Pavlovich,' he cried with extraordinary warmth, "'it's all senseless slander.' "'The most slanderous of slanders. "'It's a plot, it's an intrigue, "'an attempt to destroy everything and to make us quarrel. "'You see, Prince, I'll whisper in your ear. "'There hasn't been a single word said between Yevgeny Pavlovich and us yet. "'You understand? "'We're not bound in any way. "'But that word may be said, and very shortly, perhaps, in fact. "'So this is an attempt to spoil it all. "'But with what object?' "'What for, I can't make out. "'She's a marvellous woman, an eccentric woman. "'I'm so afraid of her I can hardly sleep at night. "'And what a carriage! "'White horses, real chic. "'Yes, it's just what is called in French, chic. "'Who's provided it? Oh, "'I did wrong, by Jove. "'The day before yesterday my thoughts fell on Yevgeny Pavlovich.' "'But it turns out that it can't be so. "'And if it can't, what's her object in interfering? "'That's the riddle. That's the mystery. "'To keep Yevgeny Pavlovich for herself? "'But I tell you again, and I'm ready to swear it, "'that he doesn't know her. and that those IOUs were an invention. And with what insolence she shouted dear to him across the street. It's a regular plot. It's clear that we must dismiss it with contempt and treat Yevgeny Pavlovich with redoubled respect. That's what I've said to Lizaveta Prokofievna. Now I'll tell you my private opinion. I'm positively convinced that she's doing this to revenge herself on me personally for the past. Do you remember? Though I've never done anything to her, I blush at the very thought of it. Now she's turned up again, you see. I thought she'd disappeared for good. Where's this Rogojin hiding? Tell me that, if you please. I thought she'd been Madame Rogojin long ago.
The man was completely bewildered, in fact. He talked alone for the whole journey, which lasted almost an hour, asked questions, answered them himself, pressed Mushkin's hand, and did at any rate convince the prince that he did not dream of suspecting him. This was what mattered to Mushkin. He finished up by telling him about Yevgeny Pavlovich's uncle, who was chief of some department in Petersburg.
"In a conspicuous position. 70 years old, a viveur, a gourmand, altogether an old gentleman with habits. I know he'd heard of Nastasia Philipovna, and in fact was after her. I went to see him not long ago. He didn't see me. He was unwell. But he is a wealthy man, very wealthy, a man of consequence, and, please God, he will go on flourishing for years. But Yevgeny Pavlovich will come in for his money in the end. Oh, yes, yes. But yet I'm afraid. I don't know why, but I'm afraid. It's as though there was something in the air, some trouble hovering like a bat. And I'm afraid. I'm afraid.
And it was only on the third day, as we have said already, that the formal reconciliation of the Epanchins with Mushkin took place at last.